These are to demonstrate new capabilities, to suggest that they're advancing and covering new areas.
More North Korean missiles fly into the water. It's Friday, June 9th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're online right now on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, a notorious warlord defends a president. Seagrass for clean water. Refugees find new homes. New documented effects of alcohol and testing new materials. Stay with us. We're just getting started on VOA Asia. South Korea says North Korea launched several what appeared to be SSMs, or surface-to-ship missiles, from its east coast, the latest in a series of missile tests of short, medium, and longer-range rockets. They appeared to travel about 200 kilometers before falling into the Sea of Japan. A South Korean Joint Chiefs of Staff spokesman said it seems Pyongyang intends to show off an ability of various kinds of missiles and capability of pinpoint strikes at vessels to stage an armed protest against joint sea exercises conducted by a U.S. Navy carrier battle group, a reference to two carriers, the USS Carl Vinson and the USS Ronald Reagan. South Korean President Moon Jae-in said North Korea should, quote, immediately halt its nuclear and missile provocations following a test launch of suspected anti-ship missiles earlier in the day. The missile test was North Korea's fourth in the span of a month and comes after the United Nations Security Council imposed new sanctions on President Kim Jong-un's government last week. Three previous tests were of ballistic missiles, with North Korea appearing determined to develop a missile capable of carrying a nuclear weapon and reaching the U.S. mainland. RAND Corporation defense analyst Bruce Bennett tells VOA's Victor Beatty each test appears to show an improving North Korean capability both to defend itself and develop an intercontinental ballistic missile force.
They've had now three ballistic missile tests, and now these tests today. These are to demonstrate new capabilities, to suggest that they're advancing and covering new areas, but also to give Kim Jong-un some internal cover from the hits he's taking from the Security Council and elsewhere, from China in particular, on their coal import cutoff, trying to demonstrate that Kim Jong-un is still a god. He's still very powerful and capable of doing important things.
Are these land-to-ship missiles capable of carrying not just conventional but nuclear weapons?
Probably not nuclear. They're probably too small for that. But we really don't know at this stage. This could be something new, or it could be something in the category of missiles that they've fired before against shipping, but these are longer range than anything I'm familiar with.
One analyst suggested that these are in response to the U.S. nuclear submarine USS Cheyenne arriving at the South Korean port of Busan on Tuesday. And of course, the U.S. has two aircraft carriers and their support vessels in the Sea of Japan.
Yeah, the U.S. has been showing a lot of naval capability in the region, trying to demonstrate that we're prepared to try to deal with North Korea. But the missiles they launched probably don't have to do much with the submarine, because as long as it's submerged, the surface-to-ship missile isn't going to work. More pointed probably at the carrier groups, but those are probably standing off from North Korea more than 200 kilometers, so probably couldn't reach to the carrier groups. So it's probably more just a demonstration by North Korea than much of anything else.
This is their fourth missile test since Moon Jae-in took office in South Korea May 10, pledging to engage in dialogue with North Korea. Is that hope dead now?
Well, I don't know that it's dead. President Moon and his advisors are really intent on trying to work with North Korea. But besides these missile launches, the North Koreans rejected South Korean humanitarian organizations authorized by the Moon administration, rejected them coming into North Korea. So North Korea doesn't seem like it's anxious to be interacting with South Korea right now, and that will set President Moon back.
Meanwhile, South Korea is delaying deployment of the U.S. anti-missile THAAD system pending an environmental impact review. The postponement follows the revelation that President Moon Jae-in was not aware that four more launchers had been introduced to the two already deployed. Bruce Bennett called it an internal South Korean issue, not a U.S. problem. China, which views THAAD, or Terminal High Altitude Area Defense, as a threat, said in the state-run Global Times the delay could ease friction between the two countries. U.S. President Donald Trump has called on China to use its relationship as North Korea's chief ally to exert pressure on Kim Jong-un to rein in his nuclear ambitions. We invite you to read more on our top story by following us on Facebook at VOA Asia and our voanews.com website. These are among some of the top Asia stories that are trending on voanews.com. Qatar crisis poses a test for China's Belt and Road project. Hardline Islamist groups meet official, popular roadblocks in Indonesia. Pakistan alleges India seeks another war over Kashmir. Former health minister guilty in South Korea corruption scandal. Companion robots featured at Shanghai Electronics Show. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories, and there's a whole lot more if you visit us at Facebook at VOA Asia, and also check out our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. A notorious warlord who recently signed a peace deal with Afghan President Ashraf Ghani has come to his defense. Ghani's own foreign minister has threatened to topple his government after security failures led to several attacks in Kabul. VOA's Aisha Tanzim has more.
Gulbuddin Hikmatyar, the warlord who reached a peace agreement with President Ashraf Ghani's administration, said he would not allow anyone to overthrow the government illegally. Efforts to do so, he said, would lead to Kabul being overrun by the Taliban. Those who are calling for regime change, we asked them, what alternative do they have? He asked. Hikmatyar added that without an alternative, the only result would be the fall of Kabul to armed insurgents. The Hizb-e-Islami leader was responding to warnings by Salahuddin Rabbani, Afghanistan's foreign minister, that the government must replace the heads of all of the country's security institutions, or his party, Jamiat-e-Islami, would move for a change in administration. Rabbani made the demand after a tanker bomb in one of Kabul's highly fortified areas killed more than 150 people. He also accused some in the security institutions of colluding with terrorists and trying to eliminate Jamiat-e-Islami's top leadership through what he called suspicious terrorist attacks. Rabbani was referring to an attack on a funeral last Saturday that was attended by Jamiat's leadership. Hikmatyar said no one could take power by force. The notorious warlord returned to Kabul last month for a red carpet reception by President Ghani. Hikmatyar's return was controversial, as many Afghans feel he should be tried for past war crimes. Feared as a ruthless warlord, Hikmatyar has been involved in much bloodshed during Afghanistan's decades of war. In the early 1990s, he attacked Kabul with rocket barrages that killed thousands of people. Ghani hopes a deal with Hikmatyar would encourage other militants to come forward and sign their own deals with the government. However, the Afghan Taliban have categorically rejected the Hikmatyar peace deal as un-Islamic and a surrender. Aisha Tanzim, VOA News, Islamabad.
Meanwhile, hardline Islamist groups may have hit an impasse after playing a major role in Indonesian politics by influencing the Jakarta election. Although they were allowed broad leverage to organize and demonstrate all over Indonesia over the past year, an effort to replicate their success outside Jakarta fell flat, and the government has taken measures to hamper two major hardline groups. And a new survey suggests most Indonesians don't even know about some of the major Islamist groups, much less support them, both domestic ones and global organizations like the so-called Islamic State. A recent poll on extremist groups from the Jakarta-based Saiful Mujani Research and Consulting says only 28% of those polled even knew what the group HTI is, indicating its low clout in Indonesia. 91.3% of those surveyed supported banning Islamic State from the country. Still, Over 9% of respondents said they would prefer an Islamic caliphate over the current democratic system of governance, a potentially significant number in a country of nearly 260 million. Happening now in Asia, Myanmar's military says searchers have found 10 bodies and pieces of plane debris believed to be from a military aircraft that went missing Wednesday with 122 people on board. The plane, carrying mostly family members of military personnel, was traveling from southeastern Myanmar to Yangon. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're always glad to have you with us on VOA Asia. Thank you so much for tuning in today. To celebrate the recent World Environment Day this week, representatives of more than a dozen embassies and international organizations joined the U.S. State Department to plant underwater seagrass in the nearby Potomac River. VOA State Department correspondent Nike Ching reports that diplomats say their participation in the green diplomacy is to help raise awareness of the challenges of clean water here and at their respective homes.
It is not a typical Monday for diplomats from the United States, the European Union, China, Germany, Spain, Pakistan, and others. No suits, no ties. Their shoes are covered in mud. They are planting seagrasses in the Potomac River, demonstrating their commitment to environmental protection. Some are helped by pets. Nursing the grasses is a challenge.
It is very difficult, and it's not just like a regular plant, because I think it really needs a careful maintenance and a care. And every time when I check that grass, we put it in the ambassador's residence.
But 6 months later, it is making a difference.
Underwater grasses are great to protect the natural ecosystem. They offer a lot of benefits for the water. One of the neat things about grasses is they provide shade for some of the river critters or the bay critters. They also provide oxygen to the water, bring in more oxygen. They help trap pollution.
Addressing the challenge of clean water is part of the State Department's Green Diplomacy Initiative.
It's certainly something that many other countries, most other countries, struggle with as well. And so it's something that we share in common and can work around a simple project that can be taken to other countries to use. You know, just a simple 6 months of growing grasses, and it makes a huge benefit to waterways.
Some diplomats say the U.S. decision to leave the Paris Agreement will affect their partnerships. Instead of country-to-country relationships, they will instead focus on cooperation with the local governments and communities. Nike Chin, VOA News, Lorton, Virginia.
You're listening to VOA Asia.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
This news alert from VOA Asia, Pakistan is alleging India is seeking another war by escalating tensions in Kashmir. The nuclear-armed countries are locked in routine military skirmishes across the line of control that separates Pakistani and Indian portions of the disputed Himalayan region. New Delhi has not responded to Pakistan's assertions. Find all the big stories daily on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As we continue with VOA Asia, you know, if you happen to drive by Parkview Gardens Apartments in Riverdale, Maryland, not far from Washington, you might not think too much about it. But for many people who live there, this place is more than just a residence. The apartments are their first secure homes in years and a stepping stone to making their lives anew. VOA's June So visited Parkview Gardens, and her colleague Carol Pearson tells us about some of the residents June met.
I am from Nepal.
I'm from Nigeria.
I'm from Afghanistan.
A bustling morning starts at the Parkview Gardens Apartments in Riverdale, Maryland. More than half the 600 apartments in this sprawling complex are rented by refugees who have fled war, conflict, and persecution around the world. Zabihullah Zakir came from Afghanistan with his wife last year.
The security situation of Afghanistan, it's not too good, especially for like us. They work like with United States or those which they work with U.S. soldiers. You know, our life was in danger there, and we applied for SIV, and then we came here.
Zakir now works in shipping at a printing company. Man Ashawani is from Iraq. He and his family spent 10 years in a Jordanian refugee camp before U.S. entry visas were granted.
Because my country no good. You see my country, ISIS, the militia, all much too much problem.
He arrived in Parkview Gardens 4 years ago with the help of a refugee resettlement agency.
It never occurred to me to look for a reason not to help them.
David Mendick manages Parkview Gardens. 30 years ago, a humanitarian group which works with the U.S. government asked him to help find homes for people fleeing conflict or persecution.
And they came to me back then, and ever since, they've tried to house them at other places, and I've tried to help them and encourage other landlords to house refugees, but nobody has ever been willing to do it, so we've continued to do it.
Mendick's help extends further, giving some refugees jobs.
They bring so much to our company, so much diversity and so much talent. And in fact, now the upper management in this company is primarily refugee.
Property manager Zemi Shabu is one of them, escaping from the war in Kosovo 18 years ago.
When they first come, they all seem lost. For me, it's very easy to say, well, you know what, please do feel comfortable because I was in your shoes, you know. So I understand what you're going through.
Where are you from?
I am from Bhutan.
I am from Myanmar.
Refugee residents can take free English classes in a unit Parkview Gardens donates to charity groups. It is not uncommon to hear a beat of ethnic music blowing from idling vehicles.
Well, I love it.
Sharif Ali Shafi is a U.S.-born citizen living in Parkview Gardens.
I get to see all these different people. It's a shame that they have to come here in the way that they came, but I think it's beautiful when you see them walking around and all the colors and the language and the smell of the food in the different apartments. I see the little kids playing. I think it's great.
No matter the challenges, most of the refugees here are optimistic. Mukti Raj Gurung was born in Bhutan and spent nearly 20 years in a refugee camp in Nepal.
This country gave a lot to us. And then, now I'm exploring a new avenues to uplift my new life and my whole small family to get into the mainstream of this country, contributing from my level best.
For producer June So, I'm Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
Developing at this hour in Asia, South Korean President Moon Jae-in says North Korea should immediately halt its nuclear and missile provocations following its test launch Thursday of suspected anti-ship missiles. The missile test was North Korea's fourth in the span of a month. VOA 60 and VOA Asia Facebook are your sources for daily news. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, alcohol consumption, even moderate drinking, can damage the brain. That's according to a new study by British researchers. VOA's Jessica Berman tells us the study suggests that a daily drink may cause changes to the brain similar to what's seen in Alzheimer's disease.
Heavy drinking is known to be associated with a decline in brain health, but British researchers wondered about the effects of moderate drinking. Experts at the University of Oxford in England looked at the effects to the brains of individuals who consumed 8 to 12 drinks a week for 30 years. 550 government employees in London who drank what the U.S. government considers a moderate amount of alcohol, underwent MRI brain scans looking for brain changes. The participants also filled out questionnaires every 5 years, beginning in 1985, so researchers could link their alcohol consumption to brain changes. They saw that drinking the equivalent of 1 to 2 drinks per day caused a degeneration of a brain structure that's associated with memory, according to lead investigator Anya Topawala.
That means part of the brain called the hippocampus was shrunk. That is associated with normally with poor memory, and it's also one of the early biomarkers for Alzheimer's disease.
Topawala says there's no evidence at this point that alcohol consumption, even moderate drinking, leads to Alzheimer's. Topawala also cautions that the relatively small study involved educated upper-middle-class people, so the findings may not apply to the population at large. In the U.S., it's thought moderate consumption of wine may have health benefits in, for example, warding off heart disease. That would be 1 glass per day for a woman and 2 daily drinks for a man. Topawala was asked whether these guidelines should be changed based on her team's findings.
It's a difficult question because I guess guidelines, you know, are changed as a result of lots of different evidence. And I guess you've got to weigh up effects not just on the brain but also on heart and, you know, cancer risk as well. So I guess this is one piece of evidence that would certainly raise a question mark over the current U.S. guidelines.
The study was published in the British Medical Journal. In an editorial in the BMJ, Scottish neuropsychiatrist Killian Welsh at the Royal Edinburgh Hospital wrote the study might change understanding of what's considered a healthful amount of alcohol. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
You've probably seen some of the new, lighter, cheaper, sustainable, and recyclable building materials that are popping up on new construction all over the place, entering the market every day as developers try to lower costs and shrink their carbon footprint. But who is to say how safe those materials are? Or, for instance, are they resistant to fire? VOA's George Pudich visited a new U.S. government facility that can provide scientific answers to such questions.
Fires in residential buildings usually start small, but spread very quickly. The only way to scientifically test how a certain material behaves in real-life circumstances is to build a replica of the dwelling and then burn it, while precisely measuring all the relevant factors. That's possible to do in the new Fire Research Laboratory at the National Institute of Standards and Technology, or NIST, just outside Washington.
It's not just the material, but it's the way the materials connect, whether it's steel that's bolted together or welded together, and how the entire system then performs under not only a very large fire, but a large fire with a real fire load, furniture or a hydrocarbon fuel, or whatever the fuel load is that we're studying.
The structures being burned here can be up to 3 stories high or up to 20 megawatts of released energy, equivalent to a fully engulfed bus fire or a small house burning for up to 4 hours.
For the fire itself, we're typically measuring energy, the heat release rate, that's the most important one, and we're measuring temperature as well.
Analyzing the collected data leads to better building codes and standards, and not only in the U.S.
Although it's for a specific type of product manufactured here in the United States, the data is relevant for European colleagues. But if we're looking at, you know, hot rolled steel, or if we're looking at concrete, the data that we're collecting is relevant for comparable materials in comparable structures anywhere in the world.
The facility also has a state-of-the-art exhaust gas processor, so no pollutants are released into the air. And in the nearly impossible case of a fire getting out of control, the fire suppression system can dump more than 11 tons of water a minute. George Pudich, VOA News, Washington.
VOA Asia is heard on great radio stations like the Voice of Chungrung Star Radio FM 88.3 at Christian University in Tainan, Taiwan. We say hello to everybody listening there and everybody listening all over the world. You know, there are many ways you can listen to our program. One great way is to stream it on VOA Asia Facebook. We also want to hear from you. You can contact us on Facebook or just send us an email, voaasia@voanews.com. We have a great director and engineer as well. Tracy Carter has been directing our program. Jim Harmon pushing the buttons for us. Managing editor Diane Gao, David Bird, and Ali Ogden are part of our team. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Have a great day.